The investigation into leaked Pentagon documents is underway.
The documents appear to contain information on everything from the war in Ukraine to North Korea's weapons program and France's relations with Africa.
Safe to say this is one of the most damaging intelligence leaks this century so far.
Plus, the United States ups the ante, diplomatically speaking, over an American journalist detained in Russia.
It effectively says the U.S. government calls Russia's charges against the reporter of espionage bogus, and that the case is a political one. It also means the case has been transferred to the office of the Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs.
And later in the program, a look at hospitals and healthcare workers in Ukraine. Are they up to the task? Today is Tuesday, April 11th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. U.S. national security agencies and the Justice Department are investigating the release of dozens of classified documents in what could be the gravest leak of U.S. secrets in years. Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson has more.
What do we know about the latest leak of U.S. secrets? U.S. national security agencies and the Justice Department are scrambling to determine the source, scale, and sensitivity of what appears to be the most serious spillage of U.S. intelligence in years. The documents appear to contain information on everything from the war in Ukraine to North Korea's weapons program and France's relations with Africa.
Safe to say this is one of the most damaging intelligence leaks this century so far.
Let's take a closer look at some of the key revelations. The most sensitive content is what appears to be operational information about the war in Ukraine, including details about the country's air defense vulnerabilities. There are also predictions about how China would respond to Ukrainian strikes inside Russia, as well as details of a purported internal discussion among South Korean officials about pressure from the U.S. on Seoul to help supply weapons to Ukraine. Aside from the Ukraine war, there's information about Iran's nuclear capabilities and North Korea's missile tests. France's security goals in West and Central Africa also come under scrutiny, with an assessment that they will not be met.
About 20 pages are serial intelligence reports produced by different agencies. A serial report is a one-paragraph, concise reporting on a specific issue in a specific country. The other 20-some pages are maps and war updates from Ukraine.
Are the documents real and how were they leaked? Pictures of creased documents were posted on platforms across the internet, including Discord, 4chan, Telegram, and Twitter. U.S. officials believe most of the material is genuine. Some documents, however, appear to have been altered to show inflated U.S. estimates for Ukrainian battlefield casualties, as well as understated numbers for Russian forces.
It appears that whoever had access to the files had them in print form, because otherwise why would you take pictures of them and then distribute the pictures? And so that means we could simply be looking at, we have to include very mundane explanations, like somebody could have literally lost a bag of classified documents, or somebody could have had access to that suitcase in some car, you know, whatever it was. So there could be some very unusual explanations for what is, after all, a very unusual, leak or spillage of information here.
The open source investigation site, Bellingcat, said it had found evidence that the documents, or at least some of them, had appeared on social media as far back as March or even January.
That's Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson reporting for us today. And as the story of leaked documents makes its way around the world, we're finding out just how significant a breach it really was. The AP's Charles de Ledesma tells us what the documents reveal about the United Arab Emirates.
A leaked document suggests U.S. spies caught Russian intelligence officers boasting they convinced the oil-rich United Arab Emirates to work against U.S. and U.K. intelligence agencies. The purported document was posted online as part of a major U.S. intelligence breach. Officials have declined to comment on the document, which had top-secret markings and was viewed by the Associated Press. of the Emirati government has dismissed the allegations that the UAE had deepened ties with Russia as categorically false, but the allegation comes at a time of growing US concerns about companies in the UAE helping Russia thwart international sanctions imposed over Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
It's a small turn of phrase, but a legally significant one. On Monday, the United States officially determined that Russia has, quote, wrongfully detained the American Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, effectively saying that the espionage charges against him are bogus and that the case is political. Ryan Brooks reports.
The United States says that Russia has wrongfully detained Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, a designation on Monday that raises the issue's political profile. It effectively says the U.S. government calls Russia's charges against the reporter of espionage bogus, and that the case is a political one. It also means the case has been transferred to the Office of the Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs, which will allow the U.S. government to allocate more resources to securing Gershkovich's release. Russia's FSB Security Service said on March 30th it had arrested the American journalist, accusing him of gathering information about a Russian defense company that was a state secret. Gershkovich has pled not guilty, and the Wall Street Journal has denied its reporter was spying. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel told reporters earlier Monday that Moscow has not yet granted U.S. consular officials access to the journalist.
At this point, it is a violation of Russia's obligations under our consular convention and a violation against international law. We have stressed the need for the Russian government to provide this access as soon as possible. We believe that it is a matter of human dignity to ensure that Mr. Gershkovich can meet with consular officers.
What do you do? Do you have any recourse at all?
We have a number of tools at our disposal, Matt, to hold the Russian Federation accountable broadly, obviously. But again, this is a consular issue that we are working through appropriate channels.
The U.S. Secretary of State has a list of criteria to determine if a citizen is wrongfully detained. Among them, whether an individual is being targeted primarily because they are an American citizen or that the detention is intended to influence U.S. government policy. Gershkovich could face up to 20 years in jail if found guilty of Moscow's espionage charge, which the White House describes as ridiculous.
That's Reuters' Ryan Brooks reporting. 100 Ukrainian prisoners of war are returned in a prisoner swap with Russia, and a government official in Kyiv reacts to the leaked Pentagon documents. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv gets us up to speed with the latest.
I cannot say that it's like an official statement, like general official statement, but at least we have certain comment from Mr. Danilov. Alexei Danilov, he is the secretary of the National Security and Defense Council. So basically, in his interview to the German media, that he is not sure about this statement by CNN regarding the fact that due to these leaks, Ukraine had to change its military plans because, according to Mr. Danilov, very limited amount of people in Ukraine really know about the plan. And basically, he says that he doubts that the person that CNN had contact with is one of those people who have access to this information. What he also mentioned that Ukraine has a constant connection with its main allies in terms of military planning and in terms of military plans. This includes the US, this includes the UK, Germany and Poland. He's not providing any additional details on possible counteroffensive or when it should start, but he said that it will start when it is decided that it is time, and basically Ukraine has various options on how to implement those plans.
Now, that's interesting. We heard from a journalist on our show yesterday who spoke with Mikhailo Podliak, and his reaction at first to the leaked documents was that they were fake because they only served to benefit Russia. What I hear from you now is that Mr. Danilov isn't saying the documents are fake.
Well, actually, he's not saying that they are definitely fake, but he said also in this interview that he has a feeling that these documents might not be realistic, and he explained this with a fact that he also doubts that these documents are 100% verified because of the timing they got out. So basically, Ukraine is getting ready to this counteroffensive, and then suddenly such documents are leaked, and this is definitely a huge issue and huge case, huge security case. So he is mentioning that he is not sure about if these documents are absolutely true and realistic. However, he is not saying that they are definitely fake.
One of the things that was revealed in the documents is that the U.S. has some doubts about the Ukrainian military's ability to carry out the counteroffensive. Are there any hurt feelings over this in Kyiv?
Yeah, this is what we've had today. For the moment, we don't have official reaction on that. But in general, of course, if we talk about, general perception of such information, general social reaction, it is not something that Ukrainians wanted to hear and expected to hear, because to be honest, if we look at this social behavior and social mood, everyone is very looking forward to this counteroffensive. And of course, to be honest, if we come back to Danilov's statement about the timing of this leaked documents out, of course, it looks pretty much like this, informational operation, especially targeting the society and social mood, because such things do not create, this positive and, attitude. I definitely should say that this is not a happy news, and this is not something that Ukrainians want, to get as truth. But I also should mention that a lot of Ukrainians are still skeptical about this document. So there is this feeling in the air that this might be a certain, information operation.
It is a hot topic, but it's only one topic. There's plenty of other things going on during this conflict. 100 Ukrainian soldiers were returned home. Can you tell us about that? Some good news.
Yeah, definitely good news for Ukraine. Yesterday, 100 people were returned back from the captivity, 20 women and 80 men. All these people are Ukrainian soldiers who were captured in different areas. Particularly, the soldiers who were returned yesterday include those who were defending Mariupol, not only the guys from Azovstal, but also other members of other brigades and other departments that were in Mariupol at that time. Also, soldiers from Azovstal, as well as Bakhmut, as well as Hostomel, which is Kyiv region. So people who were captured in Hostomel basically spent over a year in the captivity. Also, there are people from Chonhar, which is the border with Crimea, Zmiini Island, or Snake Island, as we usually call it, Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, and Chernobyl nuclear power plant. So most of these people were in captivity for over a year.
So these prisoners that were returned as part of a prisoner swap, what happens to them next? Do they go back to the front lines? Do they go home to their families?
Well, for the moment, according to the head of the Ukrainian President Administration, Mr. Yermak, this was a very difficult swap, and a lot of soldiers who were returned are in quite a bad condition. So for the moment, they will be they will be providing treatment. Some people need more treatment, some people need less treatment, but this is the main thing for the moment, and of course they will get back to their families. There is definitely no confirmation or information about whether they want to come back to the front line or not, but in general what we can see from previous swaps that actually a lot of soldiers are willing to come back, and some are actually come back, and there are already cases that we know, but again, this will depend a lot on the state of their health, and both physical and mental.
All right, we'll leave it there for today, Anna. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. As always, Anna, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. In Toronto, Canada, on Tuesday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau welcomed his Ukrainian counterpart, Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal.
What a real pleasure it is to welcome Prime Minister Shmyhal here to Canada. Denis, it's a wonderful pleasure to see you again. Obviously, the inspiration that you and Ukrainians have provided to all of us on standing up for our values, defending the principles that have kept our world so stable and peaceful over the past 80 years that has now been overturned by Russia's illegal and unjustifiable invasion. Canada, as you know, is true and steadfast friend to Ukraine. We will continue to be there with whatever it takes, as long as it takes. The opportunity now to sit down with you and to hear directly how we can best help, and also how we can work together on the international stage to make sure that the cohesion that we've seen over the past year and years will continue in all the right ways.
Shmyhal is expected to thank Canada for its support while also pressing for more help in the forms of money and weapons. Hospitals are, it's needless to say, vitally important to all countries. That importance is only magnified when the country is at war. On Monday, the UN released a report on the state of hospitals in Ukraine, and it's not great news. Lori London has this report.
We once again stress that health workers and facilities must be protected under international humanitarian law.
But despite being off limits, UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric says the toll that the hostilities and shelling in towns and villages along the front lines are having on critical healthcare facilities and staff is alarming.
Our humanitarian colleagues on the ground are telling us that as of today, a hospital in the city of Kherson was damaged after being hit, and on Friday, at least two health workers were reportedly injured after an ambulance came under shelling in Berislav town in an area under Ukrainian control in the Kherson region.
Speaking to reporters in New York on Monday, Dujarric noted that in 2022, nearly 70% of all attacks on healthcare workers worldwide happened in Ukraine.
Since the start of the full scale of the war, health facilities on both sides of the front lines in Ukraine have been destroyed or damaged. WHO says there have been at least 24 attacks on healthcare in the first 3 months of this year alone.
And he said the UN and its partners in Ukraine are working to keep health services running.
In recent months, humanitarian convoys have delivered medicine and medical supplies to several locations along the front lines in the Donetsk, Kharkiv, Kherson, Zaporizhzhia regions.
Last year, the UN and its partners provided health services to some 9.4 million people in Ukraine. Lori London, VOA News, Washington.
Since the Russia invasion in February of 2022, tens of thousands of women have voluntarily joined the armed forces of Ukraine. As of the end of last year, the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense says almost 60,000 women were serving. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief, Miroslava Gongadze, was in Kyiv recently, where she met with two female former journalists who've been fighting for Ukraine for a year.
We first met Margarita Rivchachenko near Izum in September. She accompanied a Voice of America TV crew looking into suspected Russian war crimes. Fragile looking but brave, she showed us the way to a newly discovered mass grave. Now a press officer for the Eastern Army Command, she was called to the capital. We met again at the office of Ukrainska Pravda, an online newspaper where she had worked before the war. When the Russians marched on Kyiv in February 2022, Rivchechenko's father signed up for the military and so did her boyfriend. She decided to do the same, enrolling in the territorial defense.
I think that if I had a gun, I would do something more for my life. I didn't want to go out of Ukraine. I would to do something more for my country.
She says the hardest thing about the war is to learn about the death of her comrades.
I'm not scared to go back to Donetsk region and to go to the position just because I feel really comfortable with my guys. But it's really hard to think about my people, my friends, my father who now in Bakhmut. My boyfriend, who are serving too. So it's not hard to serve. It's really hard to wait from someone from the front.
Former TV reporter Anastasia Blishchik also enrolled in the armed forces of Ukraine. A native of Kherson, she says that for 3 years she wanted to join the army, but hesitated. That changed when the Russian launched a full-scale offensive, walking along Mikhailovska Square in Kyiv next to the wrecked Russian armed vehicles on display. She remembers that decisive moment.
On February 24th, I took my fiancé, a journalist, a soldier of the 95th Air Assault Brigade, Alexander Makhov, to the military commissariat. On February 25th, he called me and said, "How are you?" I said that I would sign up for the military, and he supported my decision.
Then tragedy came. In May, her fiancé was killed in the battles for Izum.
It seemed that people like him were immortal. I thought it could happen to anyone, but not to him. And when I got the call, I didn't want anyone to hear what I heard. It was tough.
Nearly a year later, away from the front, despite big victories, her grief is still raw.
It's easier for me there. I saw with my eyes the liberation of Izum, the liberation of the village of Dovhenki, where Sasha died. Izum and Dovhenki are ours, but it doesn't make me feel any better.
Izum наш, Dovhenki, кляте, це наше, але...
Blishchik, who is eager to go back to the front, explains what victory means to her.
Victory will come not only when we return all our territories, but when we cleanse our country of all traitors, when all Ukrainians understand that our language is the most powerful weapon, and when there is respect for all of those who are now on the front.
Мирослава Гонгадзе, VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.